This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Today is 1 year since the House passed the president's health care plan. A few days later, the Senate passed some changes to the reconciliation process, but this is known as the one-year anniversary of Obamacare. With me now to offer his thoughts on what we've seen over the past year, why he thinks this is a terrible law, and what he thinks really needs to be done to improve our health care system is Dr. Michael Burgess, who's also a congressman from the great state of Texas. In addition to that, he's the author of the brand-new book, Doctor in the House, a physician-turned-congressman offers his prescription for scrapping Obamacare and saving America's medical system. And Congressman, it's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Craig. It's great to be on with you.
Well, we were promised a lot of things, of course, as the debate went on. Now that we've had a year to digest what has already been done and what will be done in the next few years here, if this remains on course, what do we know now that we didn't know, or what should we be realizing that we may not have realized a year ago?
Well, the one big thing that we were told going into this, remember, if you like what you have, you can keep it. It turns out that phrase is now non-operational, and the phrase that really should be applied is you're going to pay a lot more to get a lot less. And look no further than the waivers that have had to be granted since October. We're well over 1,000 now. Whole states have been given waivers to opt out of the first year of Obamacare because even before any of the big provisions kick in, they can't make it work. And that is a huge problem. And unfortunately, and what we've learned in our committees, is there is no plan B for a year from now when those waivers expire. As best I can tell, the trajectory must be to continue to give waivers because no one is actually at HHS is working on a solution. They're working on implementing other parts of the law. And that is, of course, the big problem.
We, of course, are seeing these waivers for major corporations, folks with lots of employees, even labor unions, which champion this legislation. But what about the rest of us, though, who don't necessarily have a huge lobby in Washington? Will more and more waivers be happening for average Americans, or will they just get stuck with the tab here?
Well, interestingly enough, there's a member of Congress from Michigan, Mike Rogers, who has introduced a bill. It's sort of the waivers for all bill so that everyone can apply for their individual waiver from Obamacare. It has a certain cachet to it, doesn't it? Here's this huge, enormous, gargantuan bill that was signed into law a year ago, and it is so bad that, as you said, the unions who championed, who were outside the Capitol chanting for the passage of this thing, now understand that even they can't make their world work with this thing. And the problem is, Greg, we're not even beginning to see the big stuff yet. The big stuff, like the subsidies to purchase insurance in the exchanges themselves, the Independent Payment Advisory Board that's going to tell the country how much it can spend on health care at any given time. These are enormous things that change the fundamental nature of the relationship of the government and the governed. And so much of it has just kind of slid by without people really understanding what's at stake here.
We keep hearing the year 2014. Is that the year when the bulk of that gets implemented, or will some of that happen even before then?
Some happens before. Some of the taxes kick in well before then, and that's problematic. And as I tell people, this was never a health care bill. This was a tax bill from start to finish. You know that because Harry Reid did not pass the health care bill that the House had passed. That was H.R. 3200. He went into the hopper and picked another bill that the House had passed, H.R. 3590, which was a housing bill when the House passed it. It had nothing to do with health care. So he picks up that bill. It's already passed by the House, strips up all of the housing language and puts his health care language in, and voila. He has a bill which has originated in the House of Representatives. Of course, all tax legislation must originate in the people's House. He passes it in the Senate as a health care bill, and then it comes back over to us. All it takes now is 218 yes votes. Will the House now concur with the Senate amendment to H.R. 3590, and national health care is suddenly the law of the land. It was that sort of trickery that I outline in my book that really just sets the stage for all of the bad things that are now just perched on the precipice waiting to happen. The process was so flawed that you couldn't have expected anything but the kinds of results we're getting. And I often tell people, I don't know whether this was just incompetence on the part of the administration or if there truly was malevolence at foot, but in either case, it is so damaging to American medicine, to the relationship between doctors and patients, that healthcare in a few years will not resemble anything that anyone has known previously.
What we've seen since the Republicans took control of the House a couple of months ago, Congressman, is one, a flat-out effort to repeal the healthcare plan, which was approved in the House, didn't survive in the Senate, which was pretty much expected. Then there was the effort to defund it, and that is running into some hurdles as well with a Democratic Senate and a Democratic president. So a lot of folks are saying now that this will either come down to a court decision or else everything hinges on the 2012 elections. Is that the case, or is there something House Republicans can actually do in this current Congress?
Well, of course, all of the above that you've stated are true. And I think the repeal was important because, look, you had 219 people vote a year ago to pass it, 240-odd people vote to repeal it. There was more of a bipartisan effort on the part of the House of Representatives to repeal than it was to pass it in the first place. So that's an important point. The courts clearly are playing a very important role. And a year ago, I would have said, you know, look, if you're waiting for the Supreme Court to save your bacon, you're probably already, it's already too late. And the problem with the Supreme Court is it will be June of 2012 before they can arguably render something that is going to have an impact. Judge Vinson's ruling down in Florida in the Florida District Court was extremely instructive, and I encourage people to pull that down off the internet and read his 70 or 80 page ruling on the non-severability of the individual mandate and the fact that the individual mandate is unconstitutional. That is really an important piece for people to understand. And then, of course, the implementation, as I already alluded to, is going fast and furious. I've never seen the federal government work this quickly, and that's why the funding aspects, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's going to put us up against some real tough votes. And, you know, like right now, the activity going on in Libya and military procurement is a big concern. And if you shut the government down, what happens there? And there are lots of things that need to be factored into the equation, but the fundamental case remains that this thing was funded in an odd way, which was sort of like post-dated checks, is how some people have described it, and we've got to get in there and put stop payment on those checks. It is going to be hard to do. It is critical, though, that be part of our thinking right now. It has to be part of the overall strategy.
Last question before we get to some of the other sections in the book, Congressman. Real quickly, we've heard from some of your colleagues, and I'm sure you have as well, and maybe you're one of them, that have opposed especially the latest continuing resolution because it does not address certain areas of mandatory spending, including what you just mentioned about the previous Democratic Congress forcing subsequent Congresses to pay the bills when it comes to the president's health care plan. And they say, well, letting that go, regardless of the circumstances, is just unacceptable. Where did you come down on that, and where do you think it's headed?
Well, I voted in favor of the continuing resolution. It was not a good day for the new House Republican majority. And I'll tell you, Greg, one of the reasons I voted for that was in our conference, prior to that vote being taken, there was not the will to fight in the room that really would have been necessary to see this thing through. Now, it is the leadership's job to get us ready for that fight. And for whatever reason, that had not happened last Tuesday. And my conversations with Speaker, the Majority Leader, the Whip since that time have all centered around, number one, we can't do another short-term extension. You cannot put the conference through. That is going to divide us terribly and really damage whatever credibility the Republicans have been able to restore in the last 3 months. It will be gone with another short-term continuing resolution. But more importantly, you've got to get the guys ready to fight. I mean, you're going eyeball to eyeball with Harry Reid and Barack Obama. I believe they will back down. I truly believe that. Now, I have never been in the room negotiating with those individuals, and this is just based on the gestalt that I get from looking at the lay press, but I believe they will back down. The problem is we don't know because we've never tested them, and I think you heard some people like Michelle Bachmann and Steve King pleading for the defunding aspects. They are correct. Some aspect of defunding needed to be in this last short-term CR. Why not take back the $250 million for the school-based clinics, the construction of school-based clinics, not even the staffing of them? Can we really afford that right now with everything else that's going on? We could have made a great case that little bit of money should be brought back in as a cut. And then once you've done that, you've established the fact that Obamacare is not off limits. I don't understand why we didn't do that in the short-term CR. I have made that anxiety known to our leadership. what their plan is going forward in the next 2.5 weeks. I'm waiting to see. I think what I've encouraged when talking to leadership, they are going to have to put together a responsible plan for keeping the government going, but at the same time, putting in place all of the cuts that people want to see and getting at the funding of this, of Obamacare. They're not going to get all of it, and I understand that, but we've at least got to get a down payment on where the defunding comes from. There are other opportunities. There's a budget. There's a debt limit. So there are going to be other big votes. But boy, if you don't take that first step, we're never going to get there. And that's the message that I've tried to deliver this past 3 or 4 days, because another short-term CR is just going to be devastating to the conference. And it will destroy whatever credibility we've been able to reestablish in the past couple of months. It will be gone. Used up with that vote. I stayed with leadership this time so that I wouldn't be ostracized, so I could continue to talk about these things, so that they would still take my phone calls. But really, the time for temporizing is long since passed.
Texas Republican Congressman and Dr. Michael Burgess. He's the author of Doctor in the House, a physician turned congressman offers his prescription for scrapping Obamacare and saving America's medical system. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.